This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here at Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with Christopher John O'Shea. Christopher?
Yes, sir. We are here. And tonight is very special.
Why is that?
Because we have another Irishman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the guest shares a name with my mother's maiden name. We have another Duffy.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. So Jean has a relative up in, and he's in New York, too, where she's from, right?
She is.
You're in New York, right, Andy?
Sure. We're based in Manhattan, in Midtown.
Are you from Long Island?
No, I'm not really from anywhere.
You just grew up in
Philadelphia, lived for a time in Rockville, Maryland. My dad worked for the CIA.
Ah, okay. So wait a minute, Chris is going to do an intro of who you are. So go ahead, tell us who Duffy is.
And we can tell. I haven't been up in New York last week with friends and family. That's not a New York accent.
A New York accent. You are.
I felt it was sounds from my youth. It was so.
He also kind of came across nice. But go ahead.
Everybody up there is a hero. Our guest tonight is Andrew Duffy. He's a CFA. He's Senior Portfolio Manager of the James Alpha Global Real Estate Investment Fund. He has over 20 years' experience managing portfolios of global REITs, R-E-I-T-S. He's worked at some of the high-profile investment firms, TIAA CREF, the world's largest investor in commercial real estate, and he co-founded his own firm. Anyway, that's his experience, and we're here to talk with him just about his take on this particular niche in the investment world.
REITs, yeah. Real Estate Investment Trust. But before we get to that, Andy, I got a quick question for you. So you say your father was with the CIA, but I've heard also through the grapevine that you're a West Point graduate, and you were also a Special Forces person when you got out of West Point. Yes?
All true.
Or can't you tell me, if you tell me, you got to kill me with a butter knife or something, you know?
I was blessed and fortunate to have an opportunity to attend West Point and then serve 5 years in the Army, stationed at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, and to complete Special Forces training and serve on an A detachment.
Oh, so did you get the chance to visit Asia during that time? You were my age, though. You missed that.
That's correct. I graduated in 79 and served from then until 84.
Ah.
So
you might have got to do fun things like Grenada, you know? Not that anybody even remembers Grenada.
Exactly. That's one of the highlights during the time I served.
Anyway, well... And, you know, it's amazing that you even knew your father was in the CIA.
Right.
Well, the truth be told, he didn't tell us the truth until I was in high school.
Really?
And up till that point, his cover story was that he worked for the Army.
Ah, so that's when Carter put that big sign on the highway that said CIA. That's when your father told you.
I guess that's when he had no choice.
Anyway, you're a real estate investment trust fund manager, okay? And you also do separately managed accounts for real estate investment trusts. So why don't we just start for our listeners and just explain to them in simplistic terms, what the heck is a real estate investment trust?
Sure. REITs, as we call them, began life way back in 1962, when then-President Dwight Eisenhower signed legislation creating this thing called a REIT. So what is a REIT? It's an operating business that is engaged in owning, managing, and in some cases developing income-producing commercial real estate. So start with what they're not. They're not about single-family homes, not that kind of real estate. They're about income-producing or commercial real estate.
Okay.
They, And one other quick point, the basic purpose behind creating REITs and offering them as an investment vehicle is to give an opportunity for small investors to pool their capital and own and derive the benefits of owning large assets.
Okay, so REITs also, though, can be mortgage REITs too, right? Where they own the mortgages on properties.
That's correct. There are two categories of REITs, equity REITs, which own buildings, and, as you alluded to, mortgage REITs, which own mortgage loans or CMBS or residential mortgage-backed securities. The common denominator of all of the above being that the underlying assets that the REITs own are real estate.
Now, your fund, would you actually own a mortgage real estate, or are you strictly building-oriented?
Strictly equity REITs that own assets, that own properties.
So real estate investment trusts can own residential real estate that's being rented. It's just not common. Is that correct?
That's correct. And actually didn't exist until about a year and a half ago when the first of now four REITs went public to own single-family residential and rent them out.
All right. Well, you're going to have to hold on. That's a good explanation of what REITs are. Right now, watch this, Anita. See what time it is? I'm going to take this traffic pause, and then I'm going to come back with Andy Duffy. We're going to talk about his fund, James Alpha Real Estate in Mutual Fund. And right now, we're going to traffic. Take it away, traffic.
Fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
There you go, Anita, my all-time favorite song. And it's appropriate tonight.
And she thought you were kidding.
Yeah, man, this is my favorite song.
There you go.
God bless you. I'm standing here at attention with goosebumps.
Hey, you can't beat Sergeant Barry Sadler, you know? That was my favorite. Anyway, so we're here with Andy Duffy, and he runs the James Alpha Global Real Estate Fund. He also does private asset managed, separately managed individual investing for wealthy clients. But, you know, the average investor can invest with him through James Alpha Global Real Estate Fund. Have I got that name proper there, James Alpha Global Real Estate Fund?
Yes.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about what your fund does. What's the unique nature of your fund as far as there are plenty of real estate investment funds, but yours is a little different.
Yes, and start with what's not different. Although there are funds that invest only in domestic or U.S.-based REITs, our fund, as the name implies, the word global means that we invest not just in U.S. REITs, but around the world. So we invest in real estate investment trusts that are domiciled in about 15 countries around the world. We invest only in developed markets, no emerging markets, and certainly no frontier markets. We manage the fund.
You probably can't find any buildings in frontier markets. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so sometimes I joke that we don't invest in countries whose names end in Stan.
Okay.
That's good.
So to your point, we manage the fund to be what I call a sleep-at-night portfolio. And that means that we're looking to invest in high-quality companies, owning the best assets with the best management teams around the world. The fund has daily liquidity and makes quarterly cash distributions, so it's a good source of income. And that's where the differentiator that makes us unique comes in. In order to enhance the income that we receive on the REITs that the fund owns, we do a couple of things to supplement or augment that income. We employ two techniques, covered call writing and something called dividend captures. Between the two, we seek to at least double, and currently we're roughly tripling the yield that's available on the benchmark index.
But, you know, even though you've got this better yield, you know, you still have to keep that value of the fund in line with other funds to make it beneficial. But we can talk about that a little bit in a little bit. Because, you know, if somebody pumps out 8% dividend and the other one pumps out only a 4% dividend, but your fund drops 2% or 3% in value and the other one goes up 2 or 3%, then you're back to even or they're even a little better despite your income. But we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Here's what I want to ask you. Tell us what dividend capture is, because that's the simpler of the two for the average listener to understand. What's dividend capture?
Sure. So it's, in simplest terms, looking for oversold stocks in an oversold market with the presence of at least one catalyst that can create a risk-on condition where you buy the stock on the day before it goes ex-dividend, expecting that when it opens the next morning, it'll open down by the amount of the dividend. But if you're right and the catalyst that you bet on happens, in that risk-on condition, behavioral finance kicks in. And there's a scramble among investors to buy things. Stocks that recently went ex-dividend look cheap, not only to the individual investor who may not have gotten the memo that it went ex-dividend, but also to the machines, the algos that control a growing share of trading volume. And if you get it right, the stock can recover some, most, all, or more of the dividend. Sometimes that next day, we aim to see them recover the amount of the dividend within 5 trading days. And by being as selective and judicious as we are, waiting for fat pitches, to use a baseball analogy, our success rate is running high enough that we can generate that incremental income without the trade-off that you alluded to of giving up total return.
So let's say you, and this is something that most of our listeners, I'll bet, don't understand. So you got a stock trading for $10 a share, and they're paying 25 cents per quarter. Let's just use this as an example. 25 cents a quarter, a dollar a year, which is 10%. That's a little high, but let's just use this as our example. And
sure,
tomorrow, the stock is going to go ex-dividend. In other words, the $10 stock is going to pay out 25 cents in dividend. Most people don't realize it, but that stock will trade at $9.75 and say that it actually has not gone down a nickel that day, even though the price is 25 cents cheaper. And the reason they say that it hasn't moved at all, is because you still have a $9.75 stock that you just got a quarter on. It's still $10.
Exactly. You've got the share that you paid $10 for that's now worth $9.75 in one hand, and in the other hand, you've got that 25-cent dividend.
Okay, so now you've bought that stock the day before at $10. You now got your quarter dividend in hand. They say the stock is flat at $9.75. You're going to wait 5 days maybe, and then you're going to sell the stock. What if the stock goes down to $9.50, $9.25? Do you have a trigger to go ahead and just sell and take the loss if you have to?
Yes, it varies, because each one of these is a specific situation. But typically, if the stock does decline, now, parenthetically, remember I set the table by stipulating that we're looking for oversold stocks in an oversold market.
Well, I understand, but we never know what oversold is until you find it, until hindsight, right? We never know for sure.
And it could go lower, but if you stick to your discipline and buy stocks that are oversold in oversold markets, the probability of a stock going down even further is quite low. So on the rare occasion when it does happen, then you would exercise a stop loss and sell the position, and that's the risk in doing a dividend capture.
So in this kind of market, this is probably like a kid in a candy store right now. Because you talk about an oversold market in the last couple months, that's what this market has been.
Exactly. And moreover, dividend captures work best in bull markets because, again, they're a play on behavioral finance, investor psychology. Covered call writing, on the other hand, work best in flat to down markets. So between the two, we have a technique, a club, if you will, to use a golf analogy, for any condition, a putter for if we land on the green in a bull market, and a sand wedge for if we land in a bunker in a bear market. That's what makes our income-enhancing overlay sustainable and not something that's dependent on whether we're in a bull market or a bear market in order for us to be successful.
So we don't have enough time to talk about call options right in the first half of the show. We're going to do that in the next half of the show when we come back. Right now we have to do a traffic. But since you're doing a golf analogy, I just want to let you know that I'm going to be playing with our mutual good friend Scott Cook next week in Naples, Florida, playing golf with him. And I'll say hi to him for you, Andy.
One of my favorite people in the world.
Scott's a good guy. But anyway, right now, Anita, another applause, please. I'm going to a traffic pause. Again, take it away, traffic. I'm going to be right back. Andy Duffy and Money, Riches, and Wealth after this. Take it away.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
You never wore a Boss fan, were you?
The Boss. Yeah. Yeah, but you got to like that song, you know?
Yeah.
I think Anita's trying to make up for all these past shows of ours, but that's okay. Way to go, Anita. Two in a row. Man, you're on a hot streak here. Anyway, Chris, you were going to ask Andy something.
Yeah, if you're just joining us, we are with Andy Duffy, and he is the manager of the James Alpha Global Real Estate Investment Fund, and he does separately managed accounts. He's an expert in the field. And so we were talking off air and just wondering, so the fund invests in U.S. It's global, so invests in U.S., but invests in developed countries. So you said about 15. So we tried to guess the 15, and I was wondering if you got to go to the different countries to do your research, or if you had people that work for the fund on, in country who did the research yourself, that did the research for you.
Sure. It's a great question. And the answer is both. And it goes back to the 20 plus years that I've been managing money in global REITs. Over that time period, I've been around the world half a dozen times. I've been to every country, seen virtually every asset that we invest in. And the neat thing about commercial real estate is once a building is built, it tends to stay there. And so
that's amazing.
Nowadays, my time is best spent spending time with the management teams that run the companies that we invest in.
Okay.
Holding them accountable for what they said they were going to do and whether they have delivered or not on the promised results. There's also a great equalizer in our business that has leveled the playing field and arbitraged away the informational advantage that used to exist. And you can probably guess what I'm alluding to, and that's the Internet.
Yeah.
The Internet has created virtually instantaneous access to information that has significantly eroded any advantage to having boots on the ground, so to speak.
So Andy, we're going to guess the 15 countries. England, France, Germany, Italy, Netherlands, Denmark, Hong Kong?
Yes, Hong Kong / China.
Singapore?
Yes. Singapore?
Yes.
Taiwan?
Keep going. You're on a roll.
Oh, okay. South Korea? Japan? Are we still wrong? Were we still right?
Yeah, I think he tells us if we were wrong.
And one more non-U.S.
Belgium.
I think North America.
Canada.
Oh, Canada. Drew said Canada before.
Canada,
right?
And Australia and New Zealand.
And you've got them all correct.
There you go. Right. You know, we didn't even guess any of the Scandinavian countries. We thought they don't work in buildings.
Yeah, they live in igloos.
You know, when you were going through the European list, it reminded me or prompted me to point out that we have a rule of thumb that we only invest in countries with adult supervision, which in Europe narrows down the list significantly.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things about the European countries from a commercial real estate market point of view that I've heard is that they're so restrictive on everything, it's almost impossible to build a new building to compete with your building that you're investing in. Is that true?
That's exactly correct, and you hit on a very important point. We live in a world of supply and demand. Commercial real estate obeys the law of gravity when it comes to economics. So we care a lot about marginal demand and even more so marginal supply. In a country that has barriers to new supply, that goes a long way towards creating significant risk-adjusted opportunities because we don't have to worry as much about new buildings popping up next door.
Yeah, it's like France and Italy. France is probably the worst from what I've read.
Yes, the zoning and regulatory constraints in France are quite high.
So we wanted to talk about covered calls. So in a covered call, you own a REIT and you go into the option market and you offer somebody to buy your REIT stock from you at a higher or lower price than what it's trading for at that moment. And the investor gives you money to do that. And, you want to take it from there.
Sure. And you described it very well. Let me tweak it a bit. We go into the options market and we write or sell a call option. And we do those always, always, always at a strike price that's higher and significantly higher than the current market price. In selling that call option, we receive money called a premium. The idea is that you sell a call option with the expectation that the stock price is not going to move above your strike price. If it did, you would have to sell your shares and forego any upside above that strike price. Not a good thing. But if you sell a near month contract, meaning one that expires in maybe 30 days, and you sell it at a strike price that is maybe 10% above current market, there's a very high, almost 100% probability that that call is going to expire worthless. Thus, when the dust settles, you get to keep your shares and the premium that you receive for selling the call.
But because you're doing that, you're not getting a lot of money. But the reason that it works for you is you're probably doing it in large quantity.
Well, we're doing it in large quantities, but we're also doing it on a consistent basis. Think about it. The premiums that we receive in selling calls like that are nothing to write home about, as you suggested. they're typically comparable to the quarterly dividend on the underlying common stock. So the goal is to roll those calls, and if we can roll them, say, four times a year only, we can double the yield on the underlying common. If we can roll them eight times a year, we can triple the yield on the underlying common. So it's a very conservative, grinded out, granular way to generate income without risking the potential upside to the underlying shares.
All right, so you guys don't believe in doing bankers' type of work. You guys are always at the switch.
You're always working at it. But here's the thing. I'm an accountant, Andy, and as I hear you talk about dividend capture and covered call options and so forth, my mind's sitting there saying short-term capital gain, short-term income, dividend income, short-term capital gain, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And we're talking about a lot of tax consequences. But I'm not going to let you answer that question until we come back, because I want Anita to give me one more song tonight. And if I'm a good boy and I do my breaks at 44 on the hour, you know, or on the minute, she's going to give me another good song before we're finished here tonight. Anyway, so hold on, Andy. You get to answer that question when we come back. Right now, I have to take a pause with traffic. I'll be right back, buddy. Original Wealth.
My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
There you go. Another great song.
There you go.
Hey, during our break, they ran a commercial with Sean Hannity talking about that annuity we get questions on all the time.
Okay, right.
And, I get that question all the time. How do they guarantee that and so forth? Well, the answer to that is very simple, and that is that you're not getting the 7% rate. He made it very clear you're getting the 7% distribution. It could be from your principal or it could be from your rate of return. It's a very, it's somewhat misleading in my own opinion, but we'll talk about that more next time a client calls in or a listener calls in. They're not supposed to run those commercials during this show. But anyway, we'll see.
It's just not an endorsement by us.
No, not in any way, shape, or form.
Without being we just want to communicate that at least.
Yes. So anyway, we're with Andy Duffy. Tell us what's happening.
We're going to get to that question. Talk about taxes. You were just wondering about that. And I was also curious that the market cap size of the companies that you're the REITs that you're buying look to be smaller, so than the average, at least, of the competitors of the category. Is that true, Andy?
We tend to own somewhat smaller market cap companies, but not appreciably so.
Okay.
The median market cap of the roughly 320 public REITs is about $6 billion, and our fund's weighted average market cap is about $5.2
billion. Wow. So what about this concept that the strategies you're using are creating a lot of taxable income, and so we use your fund in IRAs typically, retirement accounts?
Precisely, and that's the first part of a two-part answer, and that is that, like any other high-income investment, the smart way to own our fund is in a qualified plan of some sort, whether it's an IRA, a SEP, a 401k, where the classification of the income is rendered irrelevant.
Yeah.
So that's part one. Part two, let's look at some numbers. Our fund's current yield is north of 10%. Now, you might be thinking, well, that's pretty lofty. How sustainable is that? Well, the reality is it's been north of 10% for the last 14 consecutive quarters. So if you can get from our fund a 10% plus yield, And let's say you own it in a taxable account and you pay full boat taxes at, let's say, 50%. That results in an after-tax yield of 5%. Compare that to the benchmark, our global REIT index, which is yielding about 3.5% before taxes. And if you paid full taxes on that, you can do the math and see which one you'd rather own.
So now here's a question for you, Andy. Everybody who follows REITs and thinks about REITs and so forth, and you read articles about REITs, a lot of people say that REITs are sort of like a bond alternative investment. Instead of owning bonds, you own REITs because they'll give you a little better income, maybe appreciating income and so forth. But then they then correlate it to, well, if interest rates are rising, you don't want to own REITs because REITs do terrible in rising interest rate environment. What do you say to that?
I say it depends. Here's what I mean. We've all heard the conventional wisdom. You just summarized it. Rising rates, not good for commercial real estate and certainly not good for public REITs. Well, again, it depends. It depends on why rates are going up. As long as rates are rising for the right reason, namely a stronger economy driving more demand for capital, that stronger economy will also drive more demand for commercial space, which demand will tend to offset the negative impact of higher capital costs. And commercial real estate, and by extension REITs, will do just fine. Now, that's my intuitive assertion. Let me back it up with some empirical evidence in the form of the result of analysis that we did a while back looking at previous periods of rising rates. We looked back 10 years and we found 5 episodes that met our criteria. In all 5 cases, 6 months after rates went up, REITs were higher, not lower, but higher, and by an average of 18%. And not only had they gone up 18% on average, they had also outperformed the broad market, the S&P, by an average of almost 10%. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. It's a good one, too.
Interesting. Well, typical rates are going higher. Activity is good.
So how are REITs doing this year? You know, with the market being as weird as it's been, how are REITs doing this year, especially global REITs that you specifically own?
Sure. So globally, the REITs are doing better than they are here in the U.S. And the two primary concerns that have weighed on the market, number one, the risk of a slowdown globally, most recently as emanating from China and the concerns about a hard landing. And the other concern is about the U.S. Fed going from an easing stance to a tightening stance. Now, even though tomorrow there is maybe a 50-50 chance that we get a rate hike out of the Fed, every other central bank around the world, beginning with the ECB, the Bank of Japan, the People's Bank of China, the Royal Bank of Australia, they're all going the other way. They're all in easing mode. And that's why non-U.S. stocks have outperformed REITs here in the U.S. and why a global fund like ours is outperforming domestic-only funds.
Wow. So what are you buying any new REITs, or are you just pretty much, new REIT stocks, or are you pretty much just sticking with the group that you've owned for a while and you know fairly well and so forth? Are you finding any new ideas? Are you allowed to even talk about them?
Well, it's pretty easy to answer because, number one, there aren't that many IPOs in the REIT space. And what few there are, as a general proposition, we don't invest in a company until we've gotten to know the management team and had an opportunity to test them in the real world, to hear what they say they're going to do, and then come back in 3, 6, 9, 12 months and compare what they've actually delivered to their results. And so, as a general proposition, we avoid IPOs, and we stick to companies that we've known in many cases for 5, 10, 15 years, giving us ample opportunity to discern which are the management teams that tend to underpromise and overdeliver, or vice versa.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so you have to go, you call through the your portfolio, because your turnover is, the statistic I said was about 200%. Is that accurate?
Well, that's because he does a lot of those trading techniques.
Exactly. It's inflated by the income-enhancing things we do, which by their nature are tactical and short-term, and they tend to increase our headline turnover. The turnover on the core portfolio runs between 90 and 110%, consistent with our target 12-month holding period on the core positions that we own in the fund.
So, Andy, believe it or not, we're already out of time. See, you know, whenever we have a great interview, we run out of time like that. So his fund is James Alpha Global Real Estate Fund. Any broker custodian can pretty much get it for you. We buy it through Schwab and TD Ameritrade. So, Andy, I really appreciate you being with us. Hopefully you'll stay on the line, and I'll talk to you after I'm finished here with the show. But we really appreciate your time, my friend.
Well, that's a two-way street. Thank you.
Thank you. And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.